As China celebrates 70 years of communist rule, its once supercharged economy is faltering. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. First, a story that might seem as though it was lifted from a spy novel. Tensions between top executives at Credit Suisse led to a surveillance operation last month and ended today with a resignation. The BBC's Jonathan Frewin has more.
The Swiss bank's chief operating officer, Pierre-Olivier Bouet, spearheaded a spy operation targeted at the company's outgoing head of wealth management, Iqbal Khan, who was suspected of attempting to lure employees and clients to rival bank UBS, where he was set to begin work this week. The bank today accepted Mr. Bouet's resignation after its board of directors found the operation's mandate was wrong and disproportionate, and resulted in severe reputational damage to the company. The head of global security services at Credit Suisse also resigned. The incident has raised questions about the judgment of Credit Suisse's chief executive, who reportedly had a rocky relationship with Mr. Khan that stemmed from disputes over their homes in a wealthy Zurich suburb. Still, the investigation by the bank's board of directors found the chief executive did not approve and was not aware of the surveillance operation, and that the chief operating officer acted alone to protect the bank's interests. Credit Suisse today appointed the chief financial officer of its US subsidiaries to take over as COO. I'm the BBC's Jonathan Frewin for Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Australia's benchmark share index rose 0.8% after the central bank there cut interest rates to a new record low of 0.75%. And as European shares rise, markets in Hong Kong and mainland China are closed for a week-long holiday to mark the founding of modern China. After a three-year delay, Japan has raised its sales tax today to 10% from 8% in a bid to pay off its public debt. Izumi Duvalier at Bank of America Merrill Lynch in Tokyo explains why the tax is controversial and confusing to locals.
Our view is that the hit from this tax hike should be a lot more manageable than was the case in April 2014. And I'd say there's three reasons for this. The first is that the margin of the tax hike itself is smaller. Second, the government is introducing a reduced tax rate on food. And we think this is actually important because one thing that we found with Japanese consumption is that households are very sensitive to increase in food prices. And finally, the government has made an effort to introduce various measures to first smooth out demand around the tax hike so that there's less front-loaded spending, which means there's going to be less of a payback this quarter. And it's also introducing a little bit of stimulus to households, including subsidies to lower-income households.
So will the tax increase actually have an impact on kind of helping to chip away at the country's public debt pile?
Well, actually, given, you know, the amount of offsetting stimulus measures that they're throwing at this thing, the incremental increase in tax revenues will be a lot more limited than those headline numbers suggest. But I think actually that's not a bad thing. I would be more concerned if the government didn't do these offsetting stimulus measures and we did get actually a big fiscal shock this year, in which case the concern is that, in the long run, this actually might not be very beneficial for Japan's fiscal dynamics.
Izumi Duvalier, lead Japan economist at Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Today marks 70 years since the Communist Party founded the People's Republic of China, and 100,000 people are attending a military parade in central Beijing to celebrate. In the decades since the founding, China has become one of the biggest contributors to global growth, dominating key markets, including autos. But the tide has turned, and there are signs of distress, including falling demand for new cars. The BBC's Robin Brandt reports from Shanghai.
In a car museum in Beijing, one model takes pride of place. The guide is describing China's most famous car, the Hongqi. It means red flag. Built in the first decade of the People's Republic, this car has carried everyone from the country's founding father, Mao Zedong, to its current leader, Xi Jinping. Its sheltered front headlights are its most recognizable feature. In the decade since Mao first ordered his new Communist Republic down the road to a new homemade car industry, China has become the world's biggest car market. But has that moment passed? It's midweek in the afternoon, and this man is thinking about buying, but he doesn't want something new. Sitting in the driver's seat of a black Audi, this software developer tells me, I'm still looking around, I haven't decided yet. And there's plenty for him to see here. because this is one of China's biggest second-hand car markets. Ni Qingran is not your average car salesperson. 10 years ago, her business was almost niche, but now it's spreading beyond the big cities because Chinese now trust cars that have been owned before.
For recent years, there are more people buying second-hand cars, maybe because the business environment is not growing or even declining. One has to pay purchase tax for new cars, but not for used cars.
China's at the heart of revolutionary changes in how we transport ourselves around. Next to the rice fields on the edge of Shanghai, Tesla is building its first factory outside the United States. The timing is not great. The hunger for new cars here is still falling, but nonetheless, the Chinese government has welcomed the company with open arms. His country is determined to build a future with far more electric vehicles on its roads, even though Shanghai is now a place where congestion is so bad that the city limits when and where you can drive.
Robin Brandt reporting from Shanghai. Now, it might be a day of celebration in Beijing today, but in Hong Kong, where anti-democracy protests have gone on for 4 months, thousands of people are demonstrating what they're calling a day of grief. There have been clashes between officers and demonstrators, despite a police ban on the protest there. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.